flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Dirty little secret, when Steph Curry retires, you are going to be bad probably no matter what.
Probably,
whether you have Kuminga in all of your picks or Kuminga and none of your picks, you're probably going to be bad when Steph Curry hangs it up. So what are you really protecting?
I mean, I said this very similar statement like back in December.
Like, what's the difference between 30 wins and 20 wins?
Nothing. And that's what I do believe Jonathan Kuminga is as a one. I also know that I could be wrong. The Warriors' evaluation is the one that matters. But I am with you from this standpoint. Take Jimmy Butler's name out of it and just talk about this broad concept that you're bringing up, which is the idea of what do you really have to lose with the current future assets that you have? The answer is very, very little. Very little. But the reason I am not willing to give up these first-round draft picks that are coming up immediately, like later this year and next year, yeah, is because, A, we're already here and currently sitting in the 11 seed. So to me, that is already a pretty good known commodity. And more importantly, there's no time to recoup it if you do give it up. If I give up something in 2029 and things don't go the way that I think they're going to go over the next 2 years, well, now I've got a couple years to recoup that kind of draft compensation with players that are on my roster. I can do that at any time. I mean, hell, if you really do want to visit the idea of trading Steph, you can do that. You can do that a year from now or whatever, or Draymond or whatever, and you can recoup draft or even Kuminga, and you can recoup that kind of an asset. You can't do that between now and this year's draft. It's just too quick. So, but your idea, I agree with the idea that we overrate the current assets we have as being something that really, really matters 3 years from now. That, to me, is no different than worrying. It's just in the positive direction. You can't give up Kuminga. He's amazing. What does that mean? So's LaMelo Ball. And half of you are out there like, see, shouldn't take James Wiseman. Should take LaMelo Ball. Well, he's won 8 games this year. I don't care that he averages 30 points a game. They still suck. And I think that's your point. Kuminga could be amazing. If you don't put anything around him 3 years from now, you're going to suck really, really bad. So you've got time to rebuild your team. But that doesn't mean Butler. That means willingness. Willingness to put future assets in, not necessarily for this particular idea. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. Also, we are giving you the keyword that you need to claim a spot in the knockout tournament on the Chase Center floor in less than 10 minutes. So please keep listening. We're going to give this away, and we're going to get to meet whichever one the lucky one of you is. So we look forward to that. All right, let's go to Roger in Berkeley. Hi, Roger. Thank you for calling. You're on with Willard and Grandy.
Hey, guys. I don't know what the numbers are comparing Wiggins with Jimmy Butler, but Wiggins is much younger. He's doing a great job. Kuminga's coming back. Post is the first big guy they've had in a long time. I don't know why Jimmy Butler is the be-all and end-all for 2 or 3 months. And then you lose Kuminga, who's, I'm sorry, lose, you know, what's his name, Wiggins,
yep,
for, you know, for nothing. And he's still got several good years left. Over.
Yeah, Roger. Thanks. Over and out, Roger. Yeah, totally get it. I don't know that anyone is saying Butler is the end-all be-all. I don't even think you're saying that.
I think given the realistic players that are going to be moved at the deadline, he's the best player.
Well, not if De'Aaron Fox gets moved. He's not.
You're right. De'Aaron Fox is better.
Somebody asked us on the text line, if you could trade for one of them, who would you trade for? I'd like both of us to say this out loud so that the texter feels good. Nobody in here would trade for Jimmy Butler over De'Aaron Fox.
No.
But De'Aaron Fox is not going to be available to the Warriors.
Yes.
For like 8 reasons. Starting with, that's not where he wants to play in the future. The reports are he wants to play in San Antonio. Secondly, I don't think Sacramento would even take the Warriors' call. They don't want to send him here. Third, the Warriors probably do not have any of the assets that Sacramento's looking for. And four, I'm not even really convinced that this isn't just some sort of a leverage play and that Sacramento is not going to trade him at all. But the Warriors do not feel like, I would love to be wrong here, they don't feel like a match in this particular case.
Let me put it a better way. Of the players that could realistically be traded to the Warriors at the trade deadline, Jimmy Butler's the best one.
Maybe.
Probably.
Probably, but again, what I'm going to leave open until February 6th has passed that there might be people dealt that I don't know are going to be dealt.
Well, I mean, I know I've said this before. I'll say it again. If Zion were available, I'd much rather the Warriors take a swing at Zion than take a swing at Jimmy Butler.
And I'd rather them take a swing at Cam Johnson, who may not be the player that either of those are, but he's better fit. Makes more sense. He's younger. He does the things the Warriors need. He's cheaper. He's all of that. Like, I'd much rather have him.
Yeah.
Than any of these guys.
And to our previous caller, I apologize, I already forgot his name, who's just on talking.
I think that was Roger.
Roger?
Did I get that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Roger. Over. In Roger. Berkeley. Over and out, Roger.
Sorry, Roger.
Yeah.
Talking about Andrew Wiggins, and now he's got good years left in him. Yeah, he's, what, 29 years old? He's still in his prime? There's no doubt. But this is exactly what I'm talking about with holding on to something for the promise of the future when this individual person isn't going to be a driving force behind you being successful or not. Like, Andrew Wiggins is a quality player, no doubt, and he was very good when the Warriors won a 2022 championship. But if Andrew Wiggins is on the Warriors after Steph Curry hangs him up, or once Steph Curry, you know, falls off a cliff and isn't the player that he currently is, like, Andrew Wiggins is not going to be the difference maker in you being a playoff team or not. We've seen that Andrew Wiggins
totally
before.
Yeah, that's
on
not
the Minnesota
his role.
Timberwolves.
Not
the
his
only
role.
One, only when, only time they went to the playoffs was when, guess what? Jimmy Butler was his teammate in Minnesota.
No, like, but you have my agreement there. Butler is a larger version of Andrew Wiggins. He's kind of what I think everybody wants Wiggins to be.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's older.
And Jimmy Butler.
He's Wiggins with a dog in him.
First 13 years of his career. This is his 14th year. First 13 years. He's gone to the playoffs 11 times.
Is that impressive in the NBA? Is it?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes. When he hasn't been on like these crazy super teams for the majority of his career.
I mean, let me say what you just said a different way.
Okay.
11 out of the 13 years Jimmy Butler has played.
Twice.
Right. Let me say it a different way. 11 out of 13 years, Jimmy Butler has been one of the top 8 teams out of 12 in his conference. Ugh. That's less impressive.
Well, the Warriors are about to not be a top 10 team in their conference
maybe.
A couple of consecutive years.
Don't project 2 months from now.
Also,
you don't know what's going to happen.
13 out of his 13 seasons, he hasn't finished the season as a champion.
That's another good point. And 5 out of his 13 seasons, he pissed everybody off.
Stats are stats,
also
Grandy.
True. let's go to Darnell in Oakland. Hi, Darnell. Thanks for calling.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So, staying on this trade front, right? So, hear me out. If we keep the same deal like you said for Jimmy Butler, right? Same players, everything, the exact same. And then independently from that, swing a separate deal for Vucevic. And that works if you, add GP2, Trace Jackson Davis, and Kyle Anderson, right? And that way now you have two veteran players that can help this year. You're still not mortgaging the future because you're still going to have Pajemski, Kuminga, Guy Santos, Quinton Post. You still got a mixture of young guys. You're not giving away too many assets, too many young players in the future. And then you still got veteran players that can help right away. And still, go ahead.
Darnell, are you saying to do both deals?
Absolutely.
Okay, so here's the problem with that. In theory, I love your idea, but Darnell is referring to a trade we threw out about 15 minutes ago, which was Wiggins, Schroeder, Looney, and Waters for Jimmy Butler. Then he's saying throw 3 players to the Bulls for Vucevic. Your issue there is that you just sent out 7 players for 2 players, and you have no money to add more players. You would have an illegal roster.
Yeah.
But Darnell, from a conceptual standpoint, I do get where you're coming from on something like that, and I've not forgotten about Nikola Vucevic.
Right, but you're throwing out. So how many guys they have on the roster right now, right? They're playing like 13 guys right now, right? And then there's 2 guys that don't leave the bench, right?
Right, but it's not about how many you're playing. It's about how many you actually employ on your roster, and you do have to have a minimum amount. And the Warriors are hard capped on the second apron, so if they make these deals, the salaries all match, they're still hard capped, and they would have lost 5 roster players and have no money to sign any new ones.
They still got G League guys down there that they can fill the roster. Then you still got Tim. The thing they also want to do is shorten the roster.
Right, but those guys, good idea in theory. It's not applicable. Thank you, Darnell. Appreciate it. Because even if you call up G League guys, I've checked, you have to pay them. They get salaries. And I mean the Warriors are hard capped. Like they do not even have enough for minimum salaries to cover 5 lost players.
Yeah, you have to carry at least 14 players during the course of the season. They are allowed to drop down to 13 players for 2 weeks. So if you drop down to 13 or below, you have to then, over the next 2 weeks, somehow get enough money to sign those players back and get back up to 14.
Okay, Steven, coleslaw. I'm super in on that call. Austin, who's one of our favorites. 888-957-9570. You'll be first up, but get on in here. We're talking out the new rumors that the Warriors and the Heat are back in discussions with regard to Jimmy Butler. Would you be in or out? So we will keep taking calls. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, is going to jump in here now that the Super Bowl matchup is set. So we're going to talk that out a little bit. And also, right when we come back, the keyword you need to win a spot in the knockout tournament at Chase Center is coming up. So keep it locked right here. Grandy's in for Dibs, Withered and Dibs.
And the Kansas City Chiefs are going to pull this off. Again, going to a knee. You can't doubt the Chiefs. You can dislike the Chiefs. You can disrespect the Chiefs. You're going to have to deal with the Chiefs, being the first team in National Football League history to win back-to-back Super Bowls and go to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl for a chance for a three-peat. The Kansas City Chiefs have just done something that's never been done. And the Kansas City Chiefs, Chiefs Kingdom Rocket, has gone past Pluto. The Chiefs win the AFC Championship.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
No, that wasn't annoying at all. Sister Station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. Oh, my God. I was thinking of a different U2 song. We still haven't found what we're looking for, which is a Chiefs loss. That's what we're looking for. I haven't found it. But you know what is here? Two things. One, Greg Cosell. Two, the keyword that a lot of you are waiting for. Now, we do see some of you on the contest line right now, so let me start this the way I always do. Don't call, don't call, don't call, don't call, don't call, not now, don't call.
Just listen.
Okay? It's time to give out the keyword that you're not going to use yet, but you're going to know it and use it in a little bit. Okay? The knockout tournament, Chase Center Court, is coming real soon. This week, next week, and the week after, every day, three times a day, we're giving away spots to get in. 8 a.m. hour, noon hour, 4 p.m. hour. This, look up, is the 4 p.m. hour. Today's keyword is state, as in the state of California. Again, the keyword is state. Don't call now. Don't call now. Stop calling. Okay? But sometime in the next 25 minutes, you're going to hear this sounder. When you hear that sounder again, whether we mean to play it or not, that is your cue to call the contest line at 415-523-4652. Not now. 415-523-4652. Put that number in your phone. And be ready for when you hear that sounder again. The first person to call in and give the keyword state will be in the knockout tournament on the Chase Center Court. So just keep listening because it's coming up real soon here in this 4 o'clock hour. Okay? Everybody got it?
Okay. Got it.
All right. Now we can go out to the River Islands guest line and talk to our good buddy at NFL Films, Greg Cosell. Greg, how the hell do you stop the Chiefs? Only one man can answer that question, and it's you.
Well, I certainly don't have the answer as how you stop them, but I mean, you know, they're obviously a really good team. Their defense is terrific. You know, I've been talking for weeks and weeks and weeks that Steve Spagnuolo is the best situational blitzer in the NFL. That's been a major part of their team this year and certainly over the last month or so. You know, they're a very odd offense this year. They're not a big play offense. They're really a third down offense and a red zone offense, particularly recently, and that's really how they move the football. They don't really produce big plays in the pass game, but they convert on third down at a really high rate, and that's really how they move the football and sustain offense.
Yeah, Greg, I wanted to ask you about that Steve Spagnuolo blitz call at the end of regulation when it was do or die, essentially, for the Bills, and they only rush five, the Chiefs do, but one of them is a corner who's coming off of from the offense's right side, and despite only a five-man rush, you essentially get two free rushers on Josh Allen, who ultimately makes an incredible play just to get the ball off and anywhere near a receiver. And Kincaid probably should have caught it but dropped it. But, I mean, a five-man rush where you essentially get two free rushers, that's just the greatness of Steve Spagnuolo. Can you break down that play for me?
Well, first of all, the Bills were in an empty formation. So that means they only had five offensive linemen who were pass protectors. And the Chiefs lined up in a six-man front. So right away you know that there's someone who can't be blocked because you have to account for all six. You don't know who's coming and who's not coming. So you have to account for six. So you have to decide right then who you're going to let free. Normally what you do in that situation is you would let free someone on the edge. You do not let someone through the A gap or the B gap free. Now, to the left side of the Bills' offense were Jones and Bolton. Bolton is very often a part of their pressure packages. So the thought, I imagine, I don't know this, and the people who act as if they know really don't know, I imagine that they were thinking, let's slide that way, because Bolton is kind of a known blitzer when he lines up on the ball, and you have Chris Jones there, so you didn't really want to have Jones one-on-one. So that's what they chose to do. Now, obviously, Reed came in through the B gap. I don't know if someone made a mistake. Unless someone is, you know, has talked to the Bills and the Bills were honest, they don't know that either. But what you have to do is, it's easy after the fact to say they only rushed five, but they had six on the line of scrimmage and there were only five pass protectors because it was an empty set. So you have to account for all six one way or the other. And then they actually added the corner who's not part of the six on the line of scrimmage.
Greg, I tell you what, looking at that offense, there's another thing that I scratch my head about, and that is, and we've talked about the wide receiver market booming, right? And everyone talking about the weapons that these quarterbacks have. And I look at Patrick Mahomes' weapons and put Travis Kelce aside, and I'm fascinated by the fact that, A, there's no sort of big names, but B, he doesn't seem to go to anyone in particular consistently. So let's focus in, for example, on DeAndre Hopkins. This was a big acquisition. This is not too long ago, a big-time receiver in this game. How are they using him, and why is it not more consistent?
That I can't answer, but they're a schemed offense right now. They win more with how they scheme plays versus anticipated coverage concepts. For instance, they had a number of third down conversions, big plays versus man coverage, where they schemed concepts that were man beaters, and they won that way. They don't really attack at the intermediate levels very often, and they don't attack vertically. Mahomes, believe it or not, this year, and obviously it's not a factor because they're going to the Super Bowl again, but Mahomes this year was far and away the worst passer in the NFL on balls thrown 20 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage. So 20 yards or more from the line of scrimmage, Mahomes completed 26% of his passes, which was far and away the worst in the NFL. By contrast, Sam Darnold completed 56% of his passes on balls thrown 20 yards or more in the air from the line of scrimmage.
Greg, I wanted to ask you about the Chiefs offense as well, and this is not, and you just brought up some statistics that show that, you know, there has been an area that Mahomes has struggled in so far this year, and I'm not taking away from Mahomes, and I'm not trying to convince anybody that he's not a great quarterback, because of course he is. But in these moments, in these postseason games, year after year after year, it feels like it's the Chiefs that are skating by and are winning games because of just absolutely incredible play calls by Andy Reid and the coaching staff. It was Mahomes using his legs to convert on fourth down, which he did in overtime of the Super Bowl last year, a designed quarterback run. It was a number of other great plays. It was being willing to throw on second and third and long on the final drive where an incomplete pass might allow the Bills to get the ball back and potentially tie the game or win the game. I wonder what you see in Andy Reid's play calling and how that has been one of the main factors. Again, Mahomes is great, but Andy Reid's play calling, one of the main factors in why this team is going back to the Super Bowl again.
But I think that's always been the case. I mean, you mentioned the Mahomes touchdown run. That was the exact same play, same formation, same everything as the Kareem Hunt touchdown run that ended their first possession. So they lined up exactly the same on that play, and this time Mahomes kept it. So, you know, they do a lot of really cool things with their play calling. It's very scheme-based, and it's they're very good at understanding what they're going to get from the defense. That's film study, and really attacking that. You know, a major part of play calling, and I remember having conversations with offensive coordinators about this over time, is you build what you do offensively. It's a combination of what you do well versus what you anticipate from the defense based on film study. And the Chiefs are really, really good at that. And certainly Mahomes can make plays with his legs, and he seems to make more of those plays when you get to the playoffs. A perfect example of that is when the two teams, the Bills and the Chiefs, played in the regular season in the game that the Bills won, Mahomes had no rushing yards. Now, obviously, that was not the case in this game. In these more important games, he definitely becomes a factor as a runner. So they do a lot of really good things on offense. But of course, you're right. Mahomes is great. You know, and that's not even the question. You know, Mahomes is a great player. But you know, you mentioned the receivers. It's really interesting because this was an AFC Championship game in which there were really no great receivers on either team. I mean, you know, it's funny. There's been so much talk about Josh Allen, which is also so silly. I watch people that I respect and know well talk about Josh Allen, and I feel so badly for them. But anyway, the Bills are not really a highly talented team. They don't have an impact player on defense. They don't have any real receiver. Shakir is a really nice number three, but he's a number three. So, and they have a good O-line and a good run game. Not a great run game, a good run game. They're not a particularly talented team, and every year they get to the playoffs.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, his weekly visit here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game with Grandy in for Dibbs. Greg, why does the tush-push work for the Eagles and seemingly nobody else?
Well, it's worked for the Bills all year until this game.
Right.
And that's why they kept running it, because basically they converted it every single time until this game. You know, that's the other thing. So everybody decided it was a bad play call when it worked literally every time up until this game. You know, I always find it interesting that everybody's a genius after they have access to the results. Have you ever noticed that?
Well, why do you? Yeah, absolutely. We're sports talk radio hosts. But
that was a good answer. I like that a
lot.
Thank
you very much. No, but why didn't it work this time? Was the timing off? Did the Chiefs do something special? What'd you see?
I mean, I think that the one thing that has stood out, they talked about this, was that Josh Allen, every time he has done it, has gone to his left, and it's worked. And obviously the Chiefs knew that, and I guess they took it away. I don't study tush pushes in detail, guys, because to be honest with you, I can't stand the play, and I think it should be out of the game. But that's just a pointless point of view, as Billy Joel once said in a song.
Greg, I find that interesting. Why? Because I kind of agree with you, but I don't know if I could verbalize an answer. Why? Why do you want it out of the game?
Because it's not football. Do you think that's football when a guy lines up and everybody can just push him on his offense?
No.
I don't feel like I'm a purist when it comes to sports. It's one reason why I don't like watching football in bad weather. You know, I like to see players play at their absolute best. I don't think that play is reflective of that. So that's just a personal opinion. I'm sure many disagree. I have no problem with that. It's not like I get upset about it. You know, I don't get into arguments with people about the tush push. I just particularly don't like the play. I don't like it. So I don't study that play when it comes up on tape.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you do ever get into an argument with anyone about it, I got your back. So you can call me and I'll stand right next to you and I'll help you out.
Greg,
I mean, go ahead.
Sorry, Greg. I know we're going to talk to you ahead of the Super Bowl as well, but I'm just curious your early thoughts. Eagles and Chiefs. Obviously, the Eagles on offense, they got to run the ball. They were a little better passing the ball in the NFC Championship game. I mean, they scored 50-plus points. How do you feel the Chiefs' defense against this Eagles running game? What do you think of that matchup?
That's going to be interesting. I don't necessarily have a brilliant response to what the Chiefs are going to do. I mean, Steve Spagnuolo is obviously a little smarter than I am when it comes to this. But, you know, the thing about the Eagles' run game, think about it this way. You know, what does everybody talk about when it comes to offense? All offensive coaches say we want explosive plays. And percentage-wise, over the years, explosive plays come out of the pass game, not the run game. That's not the case with the Eagles. I mean, think about the Commanders. They go 18 plays to start the game. They eat up more than 7 minutes of clock. Now, obviously, they wanted a touchdown, but they kick a field goal. So they're probably feeling pretty good. We just ate up more than 7 minutes. We ran a ton of plays. The Eagles defense played a lot of plays, and boom, the very first snap, Barkley goes 60 yards. Okay? And all of a sudden, you're losing, and the whole game changes. You know, the Eagles get big plays in the run game, and that's where they're different pretty much than every team in the league. And it's that's a major factor, because it's just really hard to stop him. I mean, you can see safeties. When he gets to the third level and you see these safeties who have to tackle him, you know it's not going to happen.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, is with us. You've had some interesting comments, I think, the last handful of weeks on Jalen Hurts. What did you see in this game, and do you see his health right now affecting his play?
No, his health wasn't a factor at all. And to be honest with you, I thought that this was a brilliantly called game by Kellen Moore. Everybody knows, and I can tell you this for a fact, you know, and people listening, you know, might say otherwise, but it's a fact. He is not a great progression reader, and he doesn't throw the ball really well between the numbers. He did not attempt one pass between the numbers this week. Not one pass between the numbers. Think about that.
Wow.
Think about how many balls Brock Purdy throws between the numbers every single game. Jalen Hurts did not throw one ball between the numbers. He worked to the outside. They're so good using the run game as part of their pass game. Hurts was super efficient. He played at a really high level within the context of their offense and what he was asked to do. They can do that. And Hurts can be super efficient. You know, it's a very, very big deal, by the way, that he never turns the ball over. That is a much bigger deal than people might think, because the Eagles have a really, really good defense. So if they have to punt and the opposing offense has to go 80 or 85 yards, that's really hard to do consistently against the Eagles' defense. Now, we'll see if the Chiefs can do it. We'll see how the game plays out. You know, in Super Bowls, crazy things happen that you just can't predict. You can, you know, analyze the game over and over and over, and I'm sure I'll be doing that on Radio Row next week. But, you know, you never know how it plays out until it happens. But the fact is that the Eagles do not turn the ball over. Jalen Hurts does not turn the ball over. You can never overstate that.
Greg, the 49ers have put the finishing touches on their coaching staff. It includes Robert Saleh returning as defensive coordinator. Obviously, he spent the last few years as head coach of the Jets. What should 49er fans expect? Should the defense look, feel the same as when he was here last time? Has there been any adjustment in game plan and scheme when he was in New York? What should Niner fans be expecting from their new but old defensive coordinator?
I would think it'd be similar, you know, just because, you know, coaches kind of know their systems and feel really good about them. You know, there might be a tweak here and there. All coaches do that anyway. But you're not going to see a totally brand new defense that you never saw before. It was very effective when he was there, obviously. So I think you'll see something very similar. You know, to me, the big question will be blitz concepts. Will Robert Saleh become much more of a pressure coordinator than we know that Sorensen was not? This team hardly ever blitzed, and they relied almost exclusively on their four-man D-line for pass rush. So that would be something I'd be curious about. I mean, Saleh's not a big time, but it's not as if he's going to blitz like Spags does or Todd Bowles does, but I'll be curious to see if there's more of a pressure element to their defense.
Greg, great stuff. Great stuff, and we look forward to talking to you next week as we get ready for this one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be down in New Orleans, and you know, I low key it when I'm down there, guys. You know, I don't do the whole routine at the Super Bowl.
Okay, no, I think what you should do is just head up and down Bourbon Street, telling people that the tush push should be banned. Maybe hold up a sign on the corner of the street.
Well, I think if you've been on Bourbon Street before, there's probably a lot of tush pushes that go on anyway.
That's a great line. That's a phenomenal. Greg, we're gonna end right there. That's perfect. Greg, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films. That's a five.
That is
anyway.
Amazing. He's not wrong.
No, he's definitely not. All right, great stuff with Greg Cosell. We've been talking a lot about Andrew Wiggins and the Warriors and Jimmy Butler and what it all means, largely because of this. Shams today on ESPN.
The Heat are engaged with multiple teams on Jimmy Butler, including, from what I'm told, the Phoenix Suns and Golden State Warriors. The Heat are operating in the landscape as a team that's motivated with interested suitors. And as far as a price tag on Jimmy Butler goes, it's been described to me in league circles that the Heat are looking for shorter term contracts along with draft assets, and they have not yet received an offer that they're moving forward with.
Okay, that's from Shams today, and because of the idea that the price has come down from the Heat, the thought is that the Warriors are back in action. Now, before we go back to that discussion, and some of you on hold that want to weigh in, we do have this courtesy of our Warriors insider, Anthony Slater. Not great, Bob. He says Steph Curry is a late addition to the Warriors injury report tonight against the Jazz. He is now questionable again because of bilateral knee management on the front side of a back-to-back. So the thought is here, I don't know how his knee is feeling, but the Warriors clearly looking at a situation where as they manage that, do they sort of feel like, hey, they might be able to get this one without him, and you got Oklahoma City 24 hours away.
Yeah, and remember, he hadn't played in back-to-backs, I think dating all the way back to November until this past week when he played both in Sacramento and then at home against the Bulls. But now it's looking like even if he plays tonight, Willard, which maybe he won't, I would imagine if he plays tonight, he's not going to play tomorrow because the bilateral knee stuff is bothering him again. So it looks like an either-or, and maybe the Warriors feel they can get this win against the Jazz without him, and then maybe they have a chance to double up and upset OKC tomorrow with Steph.
Well, we'll see. But when you're a late add at 4:39 in the afternoon,
doesn't seem great.
It doesn't, does not seem great at all. Okay. Thank you. Real quick. Let's go back to the phones. Austin in San Jose. Hi, Austin. Thanks for calling. Austin, you there? Oh, man. I'm all kinds of disappointed.
Call back, Austin.
Yeah, because,
well, we can put you back on hold, and we'll try to find you. How about that?
Let's do that. I'm going to put it back on hold, and you guys see if you could track down Austin, because literally on our little call board, this is what it says. Austin in San Jose, I want to go after Willard.
Oh, come on, Austin, get by your phone.
Like, I literally almost told Greg Cosell, hey, Greg, could you just hold on a second? Because somebody wants to go after me, and I think I'd like to have that conversation. So, anyway, and Austin's one of our favorites. So, we will check in with Austin. And, by the way, reopen it to everyone at 888-957-9570. The word is the Warriors are back in on Jimmy Butler conversations 9 days till the deadline because the price for Miami has come down. If that is the case, are you back in? Or maybe you never left. But now there's this. Now there's this. That's the sounder. All you got to do is call the contest line, 415-523-4652, 415-523-4652. First person to call in and give the correct keyword is with us in the knockout tournament on the Chase Center floor Monday, March 3rd. Again, contest line 415-523-4652. Call right now. Best of luck to all of you. But just chill if you don't get through because you're going to get nothing but chances in the weeks to come. Your next chance to win will be tomorrow morning with the roast during the 8 a.m. hour. And again, noon hour with Steiny and Goo, 4 o'clock hour with us. And that is true every day the rest of this week, all of next week, and all of the week after that as well. Knockout, coming to Chase. March 3rd, you can be there. Good luck to each of you who are calling right now.
Best of luck.
Best of luck.
We'll see you there.
We will see you there. You have to be there. You're contractually obligated. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Coming up next, we'll also reboot this conversation, let you hear everything that every reporter has said with regard to Jimmy Butler and the Warriors, and also the NBA star whose name got thrown in to trade talks for the first time today. We'll get to all of that. Grandy is in for Dibs. This is Willard and Dibs.
Nation, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, and a lot to get to here. 888-957-9570. You in or out on Jimmy Butler? We'll tell you why we're asking here in a moment. Also, Steph Curry just added to the injury report and questionable for a game against Utah tonight. And I haven't really said this yet, but I'll go ahead and say it. And I don't normally say things like this, but if you don't win this basketball game tonight, you shouldn't trade for anyone.
Yeah, Utah's bad.
Anyone. They're horrific.
They are one of the teams that is actively trying to lose basketball
trying
games.
To lose.
And they're great at that.
And they're good at it. The Warriors, all you need to know, Warrior fans, you've watched this team play, they are 13.5-point favorites in this game tonight, although that may have changed with the Steph news. But
can I read you the Utah injury report?
Yes,
Jordan Clarkson, out. John Collins, out. Walker Kessler, out. Lauri Markkanen, out.
Oh, Markkanen is out?
Yes.
He was not out earlier, was he? I saw the injury report earlier. It did not have Markkanen on it.
Low back injury management for Lauri Markkanen.
I didn't know he was out, too.
So I would imagine this Stephen Curry addition to the injury report is this is a day that we could probably buy him a day off and still win a basketball game. So let's do that.
Although, for those of you interested, if you think that Steph Curry might be in or out, the number just dropped 2 points.
From 13 to 11?
It's now 11.5, from 13.5. So Vegas is telling you that I think Steph's going to miss this game.
And all you need to know about this Utah team is this Warrior team, without Steph, is still double-digit favorites.
Oh, my God. Like, I'm sorry I missed that. I didn't know Markkanen wasn't playing.
And neither is Jordan Clarkson, and neither is Walker Kessler.
Well, and I knew that.
And neither is John Collins.
Okay, so this is basically Colin Sexton versus Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, don't worry.
Is that what we're doing tonight?
Colin Sexton is on the injury report, but he's available.
He's available.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean he's going to play, but they're allowed to play him. So that's good. Oh, my God. So anyway, there's that, and then there's this. Brian Windhorst, ESPN.
Well, the Heat really are trying to move him. I think there might be a perception out there because it seems like it's gone on for weeks that they're not, but they are. And from the sources I've been talking to for the last really 48 hours, but definitely tonight, the Heat's price has dropped. They are willing to do more than they were when this all started last month. The Heat are trying to get this done. The difficulty, Scott, is the one team that really, really wants Jimmy Butler, and the team that he really, really wants to go to is the Phoenix Suns. And the Suns have basically the most untradeable contract in the league, not just because Bradley Beal has a no-trade clause, but because how much he's owed on that contract versus what his production is. And even if you could convince him to accept a trade to a certain place, it's a hard thing to do. And so you're really trying to squeeze not just drops of blood out of a stone, you're trying to squeeze a gallon of blood out of a stone. And these teams have been running their heads into it for weeks, and it's not helping what's going on the court and off the court with Jimmy and the Heat.
Okay, so there's a broad view of the situation, but listen to where Windhorst goes next.
What's happened here, again, from my discussions with the league, and I want to be real careful, I am not saying this is for sure going to happen. I am not predicting what's going to happen. But I do think some teams that thought they were out of this are coming back in because it doesn't look like the Suns and Heat are going to be able to consummate a deal. I think we might see a team swoop in here and get Jimmy Butler at a cheap price, a guy who can be the best player in a playoff series at a bargain price. And I think that's the phase of this where we're at. And so if a team pulls that off, and I'm not going to tell you the teams that are trying because I can't wade into those waters, this could be a trade that affects the outcome of this season. So definitely a very interesting next 2, 3, 4 days here.
Okay, so new teams are on the block, and he straight says, I don't think the Suns and Heat are going to be able to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a piece of me that when I heard all this today, I'm like, oh, this is the Heat trying to just threaten the Suns. Like, okay, we'll go somewhere else. But
it's not entirely up to the Suns.
No, it's not entirely up to anyone. In fact, it's kind of if you don't have Bradley Beal's seal of approval, the whole thing's off.
One, it's up to Bradley Beal, and two, it's up to not necessarily the Heat, but the third team, the fourth team in the deal to want Bradley Beal.
Whoever's going to get Bradley Beal.
Or to be paid enough draft picks to want Bradley Beal.
Right. So, here we are, and the Warriors are reportedly back in because the price is lower. To me, that means, and again, go back to Sam Amick, FanDuel TV. 3 weeks ago, he said this.
Their reasoning for not going after Jimmy, even beyond the money, is that to this point, they've been pretty happy with Andrew Wiggins' play. And they, in the idea of also giving up a Jonathan Kuminga in that deal, even though he's hurt right now, is something they weren't looking to do. The prospect of Wiggins and Kuminga going out and Butler coming in, they didn't like kind of how that looked for them.
Okay, but what about just Wiggins?
And that's like, the update.
I think that
today,
that, yeah.
Maybe.
What if you could keep Jonathan Kuminga and get Jimmy Butler? I get it. You're not in under any circumstances, but you're in.
Yes.
And I'm not out under any circumstances, but I'm out. I think that's the best way to sort of summarize our thoughts.
There's a little bit of overlap. Just a little bit.
I can see this tiny little window where it makes sense. I'm willing to give up nothing. I do not really like the idea because I think Jimmy is a problem. I also do not think he's the type of player. You know, we talk about, this is what's funny. Maximizing Steph doesn't just mean trying. Maximizing Steph means understanding the kind of player who would help him. And to me, that's not just a name. It's a skill set. And that's kind of a point I made last week when you saw that night where Quentin Post and Gui Santos started nailing threes. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be those guys, but that's what Steph needs. He needs space creators. And what Jimmy is he's not a space creator. He's a great player. He's just another option. But maximizing Steph to me means how do you play at your best? Maybe that's not enough anymore, but Jimmy might not be enough either. But he needs space creators, and Jimmy Butler is kind of like Andrew Wiggins but better, and like Jonathan Kuminga but more experienced, in that he can do everything, but none of them are consistent three-point shooters.
Yeah, I hear you. And, I mean, I'll be the first to admit, and I'm in on the idea of acquiring him, I'll be the first to admit that it's not an ideal, perfect, seamless fit. And you're right. Like, Steph Curry and the Warriors' offense are at their best when you have Steph and you have a great passer in Draymond surrounded by great shooters everywhere else. It's why Steph and Clay and Dre were perfect for each other, because you have two of the greatest shooters ever and one of the most unique offensive players and defensive players, but offensive players in Draymond Green being the distributor and the hub for all of it. So I'm with you there. But I think also from a larger perspective, if I were to zoom out just a little bit, and this is something that I it kind of popped into my head and like just became immediately clear to me watching the Lakers come in on Saturday and just dominate the Warriors and win that basketball game. I saw LeBron James, who's now, 40 years old, and has just been selected to his 21st All-Star game in his career. I saw a LeBron James that, because he has a running mate in Anthony Davis, that isn't like taking plays off, but can kind of chill during the course of games and during the course of a season at times. And then when he has to turn it on, say in a big game in the regular season or in a big moment or in just like a fourth quarter here and there, or in a postseason series, or in a postseason run, he can. Because Anthony Davis allowed him to save up his energy for those moments. Stephen Curry right now, you see it every time you watch him take the floor with this Warrior team, specifically without Jonathan Kuminga. He has to work harder than he ever has. Ever! And he's 36 years old, almost 37. And that's just on offense. He's also getting targeted on defense. I saw GP2 drive past LeBron James and score down low on LeBron.
Yep.
GP2. Like, LeBron has the ability to just kind of coast during games. Steph does not have that ability. And I'm not saying that a 35-year-old Jimmy Butler is the ideal partner for Steph, because of course it's not. But at least it's somebody where when he's playing for you, you know he can take some of that responsibility consistently off of Steph's shoulders and can potentially alleviate some of those stressors and can make Steph better as a result, because he doesn't have to do everything for every single time he takes the floor anymore.
I think it's a great point. I really do, on multiple levels, which is, and maybe this is just, you know, my quick answer would be, okay, great, but is that creatable? You know, it's like, okay, so your larger point is Steph, needs to be able to just lean on someone, not have all the defense running at him, somebody who can take that number one role when he sits.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things would point to, I guess, where you're getting at, which is, okay, so Jimmy Butler. Sure, I get that, but the idea of, so LeBron's got Anthony Davis. An Anthony Davis is not available. Yeah, I don't know that there's anyone out there that you can go, because like Jimmy kind of needs someone to lean on too, because both of them are north of 35 mm-hmm. years old. So I don't know that that's available, number one, but it is a very, very fair comment to say that's the blueprint where a team can still at least look like it might succeed at a high level. When someone is well north of 35 years old, you have to be able to lean on someone else. Like, we're watching the Laker game right now. And you don't want to know what LeBron James did 7 minutes into the game? Went and sat on the bench. Like, he's taken minutes off already in the first quarter, and they manage the minutes that way. There are more breaks baked in, and they ask less of him, especially in the first half of games, and they don't run the ball through him all that time. Like, the whole thing, whether he's playing or not, is built on sort of buying him some